We shift now to a part of the United States that has not had as much trouble convincing residents to get vaccinated for the public good. The island of Puerto Rico has one of the highest vaccination rates of any U.S. state or territory. It also has one of the lowest pandemic death rates. So, how did Puerto Rico become a bright spot in the pandemic? For more on this, I spoke with Nicole Narea, immigration reporter for Vox.
Yeah, so Puerto Rico is really a pandemic success story at this point. As of December 5th, it had fully vaccinated almost 75% of its population, and that's more than any other U.S. state or territory. And it's also had relatively low COVID death rates, about 102 per 100,000, and only a few states have lower death rates than that, including Hawaii, Utah, Vermont, and Maine. Cases peaked on the island around April when they were reporting more than 1,000 new cases per day, but that was also before the vaccine was widely available. And now cases are back down to about 146 daily. You know, the island also hasn't shown the kind of spike in cases that other states have seen recently. And since the Omicron variant was identified, it's been battening down the hatches. Now, even U.S. travelers who aren't fully vaccinated have to submit a negative COVID test within 72 hours of their flight. So at this point, there's really no reason to believe that Puerto Rico won't continue to weather this next phase of the pandemic well.
So let's talk about why. I mean, there'd be a lot of reasons to think that it would be quite the opposite story, right? That Puerto Rico is a place where, it's not one of the wealthiest American states, territories, locations, and it's obviously an island. And so when you're talking about an infectious disease, you could imagine that actually constraint in the context of an island could cause a higher caseload. And then finally, of course, it is still recovering from Hurricane Maria and from the variety of conditions that causes. I'm wondering why they're doing better than places that are wealthier, have more, space to get away from each other and aren't necessarily in a post-disaster context.
Yeah, and I would also say in terms of, disadvantages going into the pandemic, Puerto Rico has a lot of medically underserved areas, and also almost half of Puerto Ricans are on Medicaid. So they're starting from a point where you wouldn't necessarily imagine that they would come out ahead here of most U.S. states and territories. But yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they are very well-versed in responding to public health crises. And, I think it's right to go back to Hurricane Maria as sort of a focal point there in terms of the island developing a strategy to cope in times of disaster. So Hurricane Maria was really devastating to the island. It hit in 2017. There was extensive damage to the island's public health structure. People didn't have access to clean drinking water and food. Hospitals and clinics were forced to close, and people with chronic illnesses had to travel really far to get the treatments that they needed. And, as we know now, the government proved really incapable of addressing that crisis. So it was actually NGOs and community groups that really stepped up to fill the void there. And part of that was, they set up emergency support centers, they helped clear routes to water sources and medical facilities, and distributed basic supplies. And it was also the same story in 2019 when two major earthquakes hit the island. The NGOs were the first responders. So by the time that COVID came around, these organizations were already very well versed in responding to public health crises, and they had established the kind of infrastructure and community relationships necessary for Puerto Ricans to really trust them with their health when it came to the pandemic.
All right, that language of trust, say a bit more on that and the ways that trust has made a difference in the vaccination rates.
Yeah, it's not that, I think we have to talk about vaccine disinformation here, and it's not that it wasn't non-existent in Puerto Rico. They were encountering the same kind of false stuff that was prevalent in the U.S., like that the vaccine would permanently alter their genes and that they were being injected with chips that would allow the U.S. government to track them. All of that was still prevalent in the media ecosystem there. But the government and public health authorities were just a lot better at responding to it and ensuring that it didn't hold the same weight. And part of that was that politicians across the spectrum and Puerto Rico didn't entertain and boost these conspiracy theories and allowed scientists to really lead the response. And there was a community that was accepting of that kind of messaging. And on the other hand, I think it bears comparing to a state like Florida, especially because, the largest Puerto Rican community on the mainland U.S. is in Florida. And Governor Ron DeSantis, you know, at the same time was holding press conferences with anti-vaxxers where, you know, he hadn't bothered to correct them on vaccine misinformation. But, you know, like the pro-vaccine messaging was also coming from every corner of Puerto Rican society. You know, there were Puerto Ricans who at one point were seeking a religious exemption to the vaccine, but then church leaders came out and said that they supported vaccination. So, you know, I think there was this rallying around this messaging and creating that kind of public trust such that, you know, between November 2020 and February 2021, the share of the island's population who wanted the vaccine went from 57% to 85%. And, you know, as of September, it was only about 79% of U.S. citizens overall who actually wanted the vaccine. So I think that really speaks to some of the groundwork that these organizations have been doing, not just during the pandemic, but for years, to really gain public trust.
It's also a fascinating sort of historical turnaround in a certain way, because if any place in the country would have an absolute right to believe that the U.S. federal government was experimenting on them or, you know, trying to put chips in them or something, like if any group might have a right to believe that, you could imagine it would be Puerto Ricans who had experienced, you know, the birth control trials, who had experienced the nuclear test trials. I mean, there is a living memory, a living history of nefarious action on the part of the federal government. So your point that these had to be pre-existing community-based relationships of trust in order to overcome that kind of recent history.
Yeah. And, you know, I think maybe that is a place where the U.S. might learn some lessons, because there has been similar histories of other groups facing the same kind of like medical experimentation in the U.S. that might be similarly hesitant because of that history to take the vaccine. And I think that's really where the U.S. needs to do some work to establish relationships in medically underserved communities and in communities of color, and ensuring that they have access to healthcare and public health resources.
Talk a little bit more about access. So you've told the story to us a bit around trust and around information and around even that sort of capacity to change minds in that November to January sweep. What about vaccine distribution? Were there particular tools or strategies used to simply make it accessible in a particular way?
Definitely. You know, I think part of the success of Puerto Rico's vaccination campaign can be attributed to the fact that they just made it extremely easy to get vaccinated. And that was really a joint effort across NGOs, with the Puerto Rico Department of Health, with the National Guard. You know, there was at least a dozen mass vaccination sites operating across the island for months. There's also a really high concentration of pharmacies on Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico literally has the highest concentration of Walgreens than any other place worldwide. And so I think they helped with distribution. But community health centers also played a large role. There's a huge segment of the population that really relies on those centers, which are funded by Medicaid, for their, you know, day-to-day primary care needs. So those centers already had existing relationships with the community, and they helped with administration. But there was also, you know, big NGOs. I spoke to one called Voces, which led large-scale vaccination events and even went door-to-door to vaccinate bedridden people in their homes and improve vaccination rates in communities with low uptake. So they definitely made vaccination easy. But we also can't really discount the fact that Puerto Rico also made it mandatory for a lot of people to get the vaccine. And I think that's perhaps where there's sort of the biggest difference with the mainland U.S., which just hasn't really been willing to go that far. Starting in July, Puerto Rico mandated vaccines for all students at private and public schools in order for them to start the school year in September. And they also made it mandatory for all public sector employees and people who work in service industries such as salons, spas, gyms, and restaurants, like anywhere where you might have sort of some sort of interpersonal interaction or there's food and drink served. And then as of November, all private businesses with at least 50 employees have to require vaccination. So there's really not that many people who might not already be subject to those vaccine mandates. And I think just by virtue of making it mandatory, it really did improve uptake. But again, the U.S. just hasn't been willing to go that far on the mainland.
That's fascinating. It's like you've given us a bit of a formula here, right? So build pre-existing trust, right? Battle disinformation in the moment, create accessible routes to the vaccine, and then mandate it. And boop, there you go. Yep. Vaccination rates enough to make a real difference. And I guess that's my very last question. So we know it's got these very high vaccination rates. What do we know about cases, hospitalizations, and deaths?
So at this point, like there's been really relatively low death rates, about 102 per 100,000. And as I mentioned before, only a few states have lower death rates, including Hawaii, Utah, Vermont, and Maine. But yeah, hospitalizations are still relatively low. And at this point, you know, the public health infrastructure, you know, as inadequate as it might be at this point, and how that was sort of a weakness going into the pandemic, it's not overwhelmed in the way that we've seen in states where COVID cases were peaking. So yeah, at this point, you know, Puerto Rico is in a good position for the next phase of the pandemic and probably will continue to be so.
Nicole Narea is an immigration reporter for Vox. Nicole, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.